On which planet did
I
Luke
can tell you
Skywalker
everything
and Ben
about
Solo
this planet,
confront the Knights of Ren in
except
the
its
second issue?
motherfucking name.
By merch. Your
winner by way of technical knockout.
Wow. We have some beautiful magicians. Baby!
Go, Tiger! Move! I am the king. I am the reigning champion. I will always be above you. I am bigger than you. I am wiser than you. I am stronger than you. I am better than you. I am God.
Hi, I'm Jared, the Trivia Loser Jedi.
And I'm Spooter.
And we're here to tell you that we aren't that great at trivia, and I mean we're downright poo-poo at it. Yeah, ever since then I've been dogging Scotty to step back in the ring with me. No questions about El Frono will be asked, and it'll be a good time. It's April. Now I have this, like imaginary rivalry with you in my fucking head where it's like, I want J-Ro!
Jared, you lost to me in trivia. You're a loser. You're a loser. I will not have you. Lost to me in trivia.
Jared lost to me in trivia.
That charlatan friend, mind you, who has been ducking me and running from me for years now.
Your lust for J-Ro will destroy you.
And you will learn to rue the day you underestimated the power of the Bi Republic.
Is this your king? Is this your king? Think about, you know, the things you applied to content creating and the things that you maybe have held, have you hold to a high standard that people also love. And there's that one little dark spot in all of this. And you're like, man, I can't believe that I've gotten this far and just being a part of a bigger community. But there's this one little black spot in this beautiful Monet of a painting. And it's just the fact that I kicked your ass in trivia. Literally nothing makes me happier.
Hello there.
Welcome back to Star Wars in a Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Jacob.
I'm Eli.
And today we are looking at the final two episodes of Star Wars Droids, the 1985 TV show about the adventures of C-3PO and R2-D2. We are looking at Across the Ruined Sea and the Frozen Citadel. So in Across the Ruined Sea, Mungo Baobab. We pick up again with Mungo Baobab. This is still part of the same story arc from last episode. Mungo is about to return to his planet of Manda when Oren presents him with a rune stone. She leads him to this old hermit named Old Augur, who's living in a crashed agricultural freighter. Now, Augur turns out to be Mungo's long-lost uncle. He is Augur Baobab. He entrusts Mungo with his bag full of rune stones, which he collected on a mission to rune stones over 60 years ago. And he gives him a holocron, or something that looks like a holocron, with clues as the source of the rune stones. However, Governor Koong and Admiral Screed are hot on their trail. They capture Mungo and friends, put them on a ship, a literal boat, just to be clear, because this is Star Wars, to Koong Island. However, R2-D2 evades capture. He sneaks aboard the ship, and he ends up rescuing Mungo, Oren, and C-3PO, and they escape in a lifeboat. Then, in the finale, the Frozen Citadel, Oren and Oren's dad, Niels, are searching for the source of the rune stones on the planet Rune. They reach a mountain called the Pinnacles of Felth. However, they see Koong flying by in his ship, and he sprays the Umbu Valley below, with a bioweapon, the Ruse disease. And Oren's mother is down there because the family lives in the Umbu Valley, which is, if we remember, it's the one province of Rune that that Kung has been unable to take over because they're quite rebellious. So the disease, however, backfires and it leaks in Kung's ship and it infects Kung. So Kung and Screed is not infected. He saves himself with some quick thinking. They capture Oren and Niels back at their homestead in order to find a cure for Kung, since Niels is a skilled healer. Meanwhile, R2-D2, C-3PO, and Mungo Baobab fly their ship into the volcano in the Pinnacles of Felth, the namesake of the episode, the Frozen Citadel, that is, to find runestones. However, once inside, R2-D2 gets shrunk by a magical mirror, don't ask. The droids and Mungo infiltrate Kung's base, which is in this mountain, and they reveal the runestones after they find them in order to make a deal with Kung to try and let everyone go and secure the planet Rune's freedom from his tyranny. However, when the runestones are revealed, Screed betrays Kung, claims the runestones, and claims the planet of Rune for the Empire. A brief scuffle ensues, our heroes all escape, and Kung, he uses the cure incorrectly, and he dies. And that is the end of Star Wars Droids.
And Mungo also decides to leave R2 and 3PO with the Yom family on Rune, going off to make sure that his dad's business is running well without him.
Good point. Good addition. So yeah, we'll just jump into Rune Sea, across the Rune Sea. What do you think about this episode? This is an interesting episode. Right off the bat, I noticed for these past two episodes, they actually changed C-3PO's art style a little bit.
His interesting. Pupils, I didn't notice that.
They're now soft. You didn't notice it? It was like the first thing I noticed. It's not a huge difference, but this is the kind of thing you notice when you're a seasoned droids watcher. And I did a little research, and apparently the Korean animation studio that animated this was so overwhelmed that part of the American Canadian production team actually had to move to Korea for 8 months during production, and it ended up costing them around, I looked this up, it was, the budget was something like $600,000 per episode. So it was a very expensive for a Saturday morning.
Yeah, and that's $600,000 an episode in 1985.
Yeah, I couldn't confirm whether that number was adjusted for inflation or not, because it was a more recent article that I read. But either way, it was not a primary source. But either way, that's an astonishing amount of money for a show like this.
I'm just curious. I just want to see something very quickly. That would be in today's money, it would be, well, that's not working. Let's see. That would be a bit over $1.5 million an episode, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
Like what was the budget for?
Another source now is saying $250,000 per episode, so the $500,000 to $600,000 might be adjusted for inflation, or there might be predicting sources, as there often are.
I'm trying to think. Let's see, like, what's the budget of?
Either way, I'm starting to see a pattern of behavior with George Lucas passion projects. I'm starting to see a bit of a pattern.
That they cost a shit ton of money. Yeah.
They get giant budgets.
Yeah. I can't find like budgetary stuff for any other shows. Let's see. For any of like the newest live action Star Wars shows, but yeah, that's crazy.
I'm sure they'll be available soon.
Yeah. But anyway, but yeah, that's absolutely crazy. Yeah. This is, I gotta say, I will say, I noticed that the animation specifically of the water of the Rune Sea, I thought was extremely good by 1985 standards. Like, it felt extremely dynamic in a way I did not expect it to. And I bet that there was, because from what I remember, the 80s was the time, at least the late 80s was the time where computer animation was really kicking off. And I think this Seriously,
this seems very hand drawn to me.
There's stuff because I know that they're like there's stuff like because I know like one of the first computer animate like uses of computer animation in film, in an animated film was a movie. It was a Disney film called The Great Mouse Detective, which was when
never heard of it.
1986, 1 year after. So it wouldn't surprise me if because it wasn't just like because the first I'm pretty sure the first fully computer animated film that was like really successful around the world was Toy Story in 1995. All this to say is they didn't just go from 100% hand-drawn to 100% computer animated like that. They incorporated it in over the course of a decade, probably more. Again, I'm not an expert on computer animation, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were some computer animated like bits of this show. Seeing how Lucas and Lucasfilm has always, for its 50, over 50 year history now, always had a thing about pushing the limits of technology, of ILM having, like, pushing the limits of technology, you know, with creating ILM and creating the special effects for the original trilogy, with some of the first ever proper usages of CGI for the prequel trilogy, with, you know, some of the first usages of digitally creating live characters and de-aging software for things like Leia in The Rise of Skywalker and Luke in Mandalorian Book of Boba Fett, and of course then the volume in Mando Book of Boba Fett and Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, Lucasfilm has always been that studio that has been pushing the limits of what technology can do, and it wouldn't surprise me. And again, this is not saying that, oh yeah, they use computer animation in this. I am not a reliable source on this. I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me if they used computer animation on this.
Given the art style, I would be pretty surprised. Knowing what I know about this show, I would be pretty surprised if they did use it. But I don't know. I guess I'm not an animation expert by any means. Yeah. It is possible.
Yeah. Yeah. That was just like my little tangent that I went on, like my little thought experiment. But yeah. No, absolutely. I'll link a video down below. This is really tangential to Star Wars and stuff, but it's just really interesting video. It's a video by a YouTube channel that I quite like called Super Carlin Brothers, and they did a video about the Disney Dark Age with animation and how basically The Great Mouse Detective, which is that movie that you've never heard of, basically saved Disney in the late 70s, early 80s. Disney was doing so badly after Walt's death, and The Great Mouse Detective basically saved Disney's ass from bankruptcy.
Interesting claim.
Yeah. Right. And then like, it didn't do great, but it did well enough so they can make their next movie, which was a little movie called, I don't know if you've heard of it, it's called The Little Mermaid.
I may have heard of it.
And then that kicked off Disney into like a second golden age, which we're still kind of living out now.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's go back to droids.
Yeah. So what do you, I think this episode is interesting because obviously we've gotten to know Mungo Baobab. We know that he is, interestingly, I think one of the most overtly kind of commercially motivated, kind of unabashedly commercially motivated heroes or protagonists, I guess,
yeah,
that we've seen. Maybe hero is a better word than protagonist, because he's, if we look at the show as a whole, it's really just the C-3PO and R2-D2 show. It's very interesting. But in this episode, he starts to undergo some changes. You know,
yeah, he is the most, I would say he is the most fleshed out protagonist of the three of them, of Thal and Jan and Mungo. I'd say Mungo is the most fleshed out because...
Yeah, he's the only one who goes through any meaningful, you know, change or character development or anything like that, I would contend.
Yeah, Thal, I would say, is probably the weakest one. I'm not sure what I consider Thal's character development is. Jan, you could make an argument that he, like, that he learns to embrace the larger world around him and all that kind of stuff, and that he learns to fight for a cause bigger than just himself and his uncle on Tyne's Horki. But when he realized that bigger cause at the end is literally the fascist space empire.
Yeah.
It kind of undermines a little bit of that. Not going to lie to you.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
But with regards to Baobab, I absolutely agree that like Baobab, his arc is one of learning to, you know, because I think he is a compassionate person already. It's not about like, oh, just not stop being so selfish. It's about him learning about the power of community and what community means to people and why it's so important to have one.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of this episode and throughout this arc, you know, he's very clearly, you know, he's all about the money, you know, even as he kind of falls for Orin in these episodes. At the beginning of this episode, you know, he is so eager to just go and get the stones. Above all else, when Orin brings him a stone as a going away present, he's like, oh, a rune stone, we got to go get the, like, he doesn't even, I can't even remember, does he say, he says thank you, but like, he's just like, oh, it's all about the rune stones for him. And then he finds Augur, and Augur tells him,
Augum,
he says, Augum, pardon?
Augum.
Did I, Augum, oh, I misheard it. Okay, yeah. Augum tells him, when it comes to the choice between treasure and people, family and friends come first.
Yeah, and that, by the way, that is, what was I going to say? That was like a like a regular canon level like thesis statement for the episode for me. Like, I'm like, okay,
yeah,
that's going to come in handy sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
family and friends must come first. And that's a Star Wars lesson right there. That's, I think, my favorite thing about this episode is that I can hear that in a Star Wars movie. I could.
Yeah.
I could hear that line in the Star Wars film. Or a show. Like, you don't need to change it at all. If you just inserted that line into the next episode of The Bad Batch, I would believe you.
Yeah. And it's only when Mungo is pushed, you know, throughout this episode, you know, you have Orin, you know, begging him to not go after the rest of the runestones, the source of the runestones. She says, you already have enough runestones. You have this big bag of runestones that your long lost uncle left to you.
Yeah.
When he also, it is the most Star Wars thing ever that like his uncle like straight up passes away out of the mortal world. As soon as he meets him, he's just like, I have someone to carry on my legacy now. Okay. I'm dead.
Yeah. Like, I will say that this is interesting. Augum's death is the first organic being death in this whole series. And in the final two episodes, we get not one, but two of them. They droids was notorious. And I'm not saying this is a good or bad thing. I'm just saying they were notorious for not killing a single human or humanoid or like organic character in the first 11 episodes of this thing, if we're including Great Heap. And all of a sudden, in the last two episodes, they become fucking Game of Thrones or something. And they kill one character an episode.
I mean, that's pretty tame for Game of Thrones, but I see where
you're going. No, I know, but like, you know, like they ramp up their death count like just unexpectedly quickly.
Yeah, it is. Because they so, at least compared to every other Star Wars, where every other Star Wars show, movie, what have you, where just, oh, people are just dying left and right just because it's interesting. It's almost like they had a line in the sand, but then at the end
they just decide to cross it for some reason.
I guess not. So I was a little bit confused.
I was willing to accept, yeah, with, I don't like, really with, think with Augum's death, like with Augum's death, I thought it was like a, oh, this is like a Yoda parallel, because Augum very much filled that role. Oh, there's nothing left I have to say, there's nothing left I have to teach you. I'm like, okay, so it's not like no one killed Augum. But then Kung is vanquished at the end, and I thought, oh, he was going to run away and, you know, shake his fist, I'll get you someday, Mungo Baobab.
But it's also not an endorsement.
Or a Kylo Ren exit. But then he just straight up disappears.
But it's also not necessarily, an embrace. They're not embracing killing still. And I'm not saying that every death in media is necessarily an endorsement of killing people every time a person is killed. Certainly not. But it's still just interesting that they even as these two characters die, like
they're not killed by people. They're killed by Ogham
dies. Yeah, Ogham dies of old age, and Kung dies kind of as a direct result of his own cruelty of trying to drop a bioweapon.
I guess my only question is why did they seem to even keep it more G-rated in previous episodes with people like Cy's Fom or people like Kaibo Ren? Like, why didn't they kill any of it would have been so easy for Kaibo Ren to run off a cliff or something like that. That's a direct result of his own actions, that no one's killing him. It's just and it's not a criticism exactly. It's just strange. This show does a lot of things. And I think that this is a thing that actually, I gotta say, we're recording our retrospective episode later today as well. And I'll talk about this then. But I think there is an element of droids that I think Star Wars shows should be more willing to embrace, which is answering the question, why is this happening in the story? Why is X thing happening to the story? With the answer, because fuck you, we want it to. Like, droids doesn't care what anybody thinks about it. Doesn't care. Doesn't care. It does it, and then it says, fuck you if you disagree. And, you know, I'm not saying I agree with all decisions they made. I don't. But they do. They do some of the goofiest and wackiest shit I've ever seen in Star Wars in this episode. Or not in this episode, in the show. But they don't care. They'll embrace it completely full on.
Yeah, that's kind of the show's... I mean, that's definitely the show's whole shtick. You know, they love to play with the boundaries, play with the rules. And I appreciate it for that. But then, we get to the moment when Baobab finally kind of learns his lesson after an entire episode of putting his commercial interests and his greed, to be honest, ahead of the actual people around him. And then we have this moment when he's faced with either him and all his friends going down with the ship as they're sucking this whirlpool, or chucking out the runestones to make them light, to make their ship lighter and allow them to avoid the whirlpool. And he does that.
Yeah, he chooses his friends over fortune and glory and getting the relics for himself. Which, wait, is this an episode of Star Wars or is this an episode of Indiana Jones? Because Across the Rune Sea, and I will say this 100%. Like, I've been comparing a lot of these episodes to other Lucasfilm properties. This is the, compared the Trigon to the Malevolence. This is the Indiana Jones of droids. Just like next episode is the Blue Shadow Virus of droids.
The Blue Shadow Virus. That was an episode.
That was, and you can't tell me that Governor Kung isn't the Nouveau Vendi role in this episode.
Yeah.
Except for he actually meets a worse fate than Nouveau Vendi somehow.
Yeah, he deserved it. Not a pleasant guy. Not a pleasant guy at all.
Governor Kung, and we'll get to this, but Kung learns the lesson the hard way that so many other people learn. Making a deal with the Empire is never going to work.
Yeah, that's another one of the lessons. Is
they will always betray you, and I thought that lesson was extremely extremely well conveyed in the Frozen Citadel, and I thought it was very like it fits with a lot of other Star Wars stories. You know,
yeah, it definitely fits with the
you make a deal with the devil and you become them.
It definitely fits into Star Wars's commentary on authoritarianism and fascism. Like in the previous episodes, the show really explored the idea of how, runaway capitalism, commercial exploitation is really used. The Empire really uses corporate greed as a tool to accomplish its goals. But at the end of the day, the Empire is still just out for the Empire. Like you know, as an industrialist who wants to work with the Empire, you know, as a corporate interest in this universe, you can convince yourself that, you know, the Empire, you know, you say something, you know, maybe they, oh, the Empire cares about, you know, business. They're pro business, you know, whatever.
No, they don't.
You ever want to say they don't, they're just straight up. They're straight up crazy. Like
they only care about consolidating their own power.
They're not actually pro business. Cough, cough, fascism, cough, cough, yep. Modern day right wing authoritarianism.
Yep.
Cough, cough. Can I make myself any clearer? Okay, soapbox moment. But yeah, and then the next episode, it's interesting. Well, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say let's wrap up stuff from this episode.
Okay, yeah, what else you got? Because the main threads just kind of continue into the next episode. But
yeah, there are two things. I will say that first one, when I was comparing Ogham to Yoda earlier, that was not just something I thought of in the moment. Like very much, I'm not saying that Ogham is force sensitive, though wouldn't it be cool if he was? But he does feel that Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, they literally say, oh, old Ogham lives out beyond the Bantha graveyards. And that sounds an awful lot to me like, oh, old Ben lives out beyond the jungle and wastes. He's a crazy old hermit. And I'm like, wait, are they setting up Ogham to be force sensitive?
I mean, he's like we see a lot of these, we see these characters, you know, Yoda, we have like Quill. Like he's that kind of that
Quill,
type of
sort of, kind of like Quill.
Maybe a little more like Yoda in the role that he plays for the story.
Yoda, Obi-Wan, I would say, you know, the old reclusive hermit who offers our heroes guidance when they most need it. I'm like, oh, that's nice to see that. That's nice to see that trope. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
The other thing I was gonna talk about was, I don't know if you noticed, but the droids on the ship. The droids on what's his face? On Kung's ship. First of all, one of the droids that R2 slips by in the episode looks a lot like a commando droid to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I
then
so.
The,
I didn't notice that, but I,
and then
yeah,
the
I know
drones that the drones that they send after Baobab and his forces after they manage to escape. You can't convince me that those aren't vulture droids or hyena bombers. And so I have this headcanon that I'm going to use now, which is that a lot of Kung's fleet is just scavenged, separatist military assets.
It's possible, yeah.
And obviously, yeah, you know, they didn't know who the separatists were though, and they were writing this and blah, blah, blah. But I like the idea of, like, retconning that in, of the idea that, yeah, this whole idea is that that Kung's fleet is scavenged separatist material. I think that's a really cool idea, and I'd love to see that's actually what I'd love to see is the legacy of the Separatist Alliance. And I we've been getting it a bit in the Bad Batch. We got it a bit in Rebels for a few episodes, but you know, the droid army was shut down at the end of Revenge of the Sith. But it's not like this like separatist ideals and separatist like iconography just vanished. I mean, obviously the Empire probably made that shit illegal, but just by making something illegal doesn't mean that it automatically 100% disappears.
I mean, we got the last battle in Rebels.
That's so what I was thinking of, last battle, and I was thinking of like stuff like the two-part arc in the beginning of season two of the Bad Batch, and some other stuff like you know, like Colin Ground from season one of the Bad Batch. We know that Cal in Jedi Survivor is going to be facing a lot of former separatist droid units on that planet Kobo that he's starting out on. We're recording this, we're about, I'd say, a month and a half out as of the date of this recording from Jedi Survivor, so I don't think this is going to come out after Jedi Survivor releases. I think this should come out before, but like, you know, I'm going to look back on this in like 2 months. And I'm gonna say, yeah, I was completely on the money there, or no, I was completely wrong. That they were like this was like, oh, Jedi Survivor had a big message about the Separatists, or oh no, they were just in the game just to be in the game. One of those two things is I'm sure going to happen. So future Eli's gonna love this. What was I gonna say? But yeah, I thought that was an interesting idea, and I hope to see, and they've hinted about this, and I hope they talk about this with Andor actually. because it's very well established that Cassian, in his youth, was a separatist sympathizer.
Yeah.
And it was established in Legends a lot that there's this idea that a lot of the early rebel cells came from former separatist factions. So how did separatist ideology play into the foundation of the Rebel Alliance? And how did that conflict or not with, you know, people like Mon and Bail, who, you know, created the Alliance as an idea of the idea of the Alliance to restore the Republic. And they were obviously Republic sympathizers during the Clone War. And so I'm interested to see if that, and like, I think, I'm not sure if we know this, but wasn't Anto Krieger a separatist? Let me check that. I think Anto Krieger was a separatist. Yeah, he was a former separatist.
Wow, look at that.
So, yeah.
Now that's something that really could be explored more, I think, is kind of the separatist rebel, you know, connection, any, and, you know, like, you know, maybe some of the ex-separatists versus Republic loyalists who then
in the foundation of the Rebel Alliance,
became rebels. You know, what's the difference between a separatist and a rebel? Some people maybe think there is a big difference. Some people maybe don't, you know. Like, what would Mon Moth, like, how would someone like Mon Mothma, you know, kind of look back on the Clone Wars, you know, with the knowledge that they now have? That could be very interesting. I'd love
and
to
I
see
actually hope
like
that comes up in conversation between Mon and Cassian, because there's a 0% chance they don't meet in season two. But regardless of how much we know about their stories in season one, they did not share a single moment face to face in season one. Not a single one. They were never in the same room. Basically, their contacts were through Luthen. They knew each other through Luthen Rael. But they're going to have to be a conversation, because Cassian is right now on the more boots on the ground radical, oh, we got to fight them with everything we have path. Whereas Mon still is holding on to the idea that this could be resolved, this whole conflict between of the Empire's tyranny could be resolved through political purposes and through diplomacy. And there's obviously going to be a place where she's going to go from that. And I think this is an idea that, all credit to friend of the show, Alden Diaz, Tapestry Man, October Radio, go check it out. Fucking great show. Love, like, you know, how does she get from, oh, I'm not sure that violence is the best way, we should solve this through diplomacy, to let's blow up that Death Star. Let's blow up that motherfucker.
I mean, the Death Star, I think, was an act of self-defense for the rebellion.
I'm talking about the second Death Star.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking about
the second
Death Star.
Okay.
Because
then,
because you know, the Death Star, you could argue that, absolutely. But the second Death Star is still in construction. We know that the Emperor is going to be there. The Empire, what's the line? The Emperor has made a critical error, and the time for attack is now. Like, can you imagine Mothma and Andor saying that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, knowing Mothma, I'm sure she still feels, and I think she would be right to feel, that her hand is forced in that situation. You know, they have this massive once it's fully online, they have this massive planet killer super weapon for the second time, even more deadly than the first time. And this time, you know, they have the experience from last time. They learned from their mistakes. It really could be almost indestructible this time, you know, like, for the sake of the galaxy and for the sake of the rebellion, for the future of the rebellion, you can't let something like that happen, really, I think. So
oh,
I think that
but
in
I'm
her
not
framework,
sure
I think she would
be
just,
willing to...
I think a preemptive strike would be fully justified,
yeah.
Especially
I'm not,
that there are.
I'm not trying to say that her thing is unjustified. I'm just trying to say that former Mon, I think, would think that would be unjustified. Like, I couldn't see Mon of season one of Andor making that decision. I just couldn't. You saw how long it took her to, you know, to agree to the thing with Leeta and the daughter of Davos Gul'dan and the son of Davos Gul'dan. Like, that took her, like, a good episode to be like, yeah, I'm willing to do this.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. That's true.
Anyway, back to droids. You want to go to the Frozen Citadel?
Can we talk about the comedian droid for a moment?
Oh, Lindy?
I thought Lindy was something else, man. Like, of all the things this show does with the droids and the way that it kind of pushes the boundaries and blurs the lines of droid versus person, Lindy is kind of wild.
Lindy was just like, all right, I see what they were going for, but not my thing. I don't hate Lindy by any stretch of the imagination. I just was like, they tried.
I love when they just do some goofy, crazy shit like that. I just think it's the best.
Let's see. Yeah, you want to go to the Frozen Citadel?
Yeah, the Frozen Citadel. A finale. A big finale. So, where do we start with this episode? Coon releases the ruse virus.
Which, by the way, is a virus so extreme, it's a biological weapon so extreme, that the Galactic fucking Empire is like, yeah, this guy's going too far.
Yeah, of all the people, of Screed of all people, is like, yo, don't use this, that's
how
crazy.
You know Kung's a bad guy, is that even Screed's like, yo, man, take it back a little bit. You gotta calm down. Although I will say that Screed's issue was not with its extremity, but with its effectiveness. Because he said, like, the Empire used it at the Battle of whatever it is. I forget the throwaway line, but what was I going to say? Let's see. The Ruse sickness. I'm going to look at this. What was it? The Maven conflict. Yeah. Because it was ineffective in the Maven conflict, whatever that is.
Well, it wasn't ineffective here.
Yeah.
Kung literally disappeared into thin air.
Yeah. No, but yeah. It wasn't that it was ineffective. It was that it eliminated as many Imperial troops as it did Rebels. Yeah. So, like, they didn't have a good protocol for using it, so they were just like, yeah, we shouldn't do this until we more fully understand, like, the consequences of doing this. But Kung was like, yeah, no, fuck it. We're going to do
it. Kung was like, yeah, fuck it. We got to release this. I can't even remember. What is his rationale for releasing it? Is just, I think he says, like, oh, the vegetation will grow back in a year. So first of all, wait, this, like, is a virus so bad that not only does it destroy humans and humanoid species, it defoliates the environment? Like,
yeah.
And you thought this was a good idea to...
Well, Kung is the classic Clone Wars Osi Sobek, Mirage Sentel, you know, Nouveau Vendi is also a good example. Locke Dird, you know, all those secondary villains who Count Dooku is like, hey, you better not fuck this up. And they're like, no, Count, I won't fuck this up. And they immediately fuck this up. Like, that, if you just replace Dooku with Screed and any of the TCW generic villains. And I like a lot of those goofy ass, like Osi Sobek or all, or... You know, all those, I love those guys. There's not a slight on
the underlings.
Yeah, the underlings. But replace them with Governor Kung, and that's this episode. Like Kung is like, you know, he's failed, like, now he's failed three times in a row. With the Tale of the Rune comments, with the Rune games, and then with the frickin'.
Yeah.
The sea thing, the Whirlpool
incident. Yeah, he's the classic villain underling, and I mean...
Yeah.
He and his relationship with one of the best parts of the show, I think, is his dynamic with Admiral Screed. It's that prototypical boss, bad boss, underling kind of Star Wars. At least in Star Wars, it's prototypical of that kind of relationship. What does he say? What does Screed says? What does he say? It doesn't surprise me that the one area on this planet worth having is the one that you can't capture.
That is maybe the best line in either of these two
episodes.
And it's great because it's really like, it fits well, unintentionally, obviously, but it fits well with a lot of stuff we've seen about how the Empire treats planets and how the Empire treats society. You know, this makes me think back to Lothal in Rebels, makes me think back to Aldani in Andor. You know, the idea that, you know, the Empire doesn't value the planets as members of their society, but for their resources. Because the Empire has all the other parts of the planet, but it doesn't have the most valuable part, so it doesn't have anything as far as it's concerned.
Yeah. It's nothing worth taking for the Empire.
Yeah, it's all about give, gimme, greed of the resources without valuing any of it and stuff like that. You know, they valued Lothal because of its location in the galaxy for mining purposes, and also for, because the Emperor was interested in the world between worlds and shit like that. But Lothal was a people, and Lothal was, you know, like they for 4 years, not for 4 years, for like over a decade, they like fucked up the way most people on Lothal live their daily lives. They didn't care.
Yeah,
it was never about them. And I thought it was incredibly well done and consistent with a lot of the things we've been seeing about the Empire in newer Star Wars media.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This, I want to talk about Baobab.
Yeah.
In this episode, because we finally see him turn the leaf. You know, he's like C-3PO kind of says at the beginning of the episode. He says like, "Hey man, you're a changed man," you know, and he's like, "Yeah, like, you know, Auron really made me rethink,
yeah,
my priorities." What do you think?
Well, first of all, I was making jokes about, oh yeah, they're definitely banging off screen or something like that. And then they like full on mouth kissed. I'm like, whoa, I did not expect a kids show to go there.
Yeah, in the 80s, I did not expect like.
I was joking. I didn't mean this seriously. I didn't think they were actually going to kiss on screen.
Yeah, I didn't Slow expect down, there guys. To be any romance in this show, given the kind of Saturday morning. I don't know, man. I'm not really familiar with the.
This is a kids show. You can't get horny here.
Media at this time. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, you know, it's cool to see him show some development. Now, maybe this is a stretch. I don't know if they had this in mind or not, but you know, obviously, you know, blanking on the name now. You know, Mungo, obviously, he's always after the treasure. But Auron, her name sounds an awful lot like Aurum. Or, you know, it's Latin for gold.
Gold. Okay. So you know, that's very funny.
Star Wars, you know, they love their symbolic names. I wonder if they're trying to, wonder if that's a little hint saying, hint, hint, hey, Mungo, maybe the real treasure is what your uncle said. Maybe it's really about
it's people, the family and friends.
I would say that is
the stupidest idea I've ever heard, except for one thing.
This is Lucasfilm.
I would say, except for one thing, I don't think you've watched this episode, but there's an episode of The Bad Batch called The Crossing that I don't think you've gotten to yet.
I've not, no.
The Bad Batch go into they're forced into a mine for an element called Ipsium. And there's a lot of emotional development in that episode, especially for Omega and Crosshair, because of a major event that happened the episode before then that I won't say because, you know, spoilers. Ipsium. If you remove an I from that word, it's the Latin word ipsum. And ipsum means him or her or themselves. So they were mining ipsium in the ore, in the cave, but they were also finding themselves.
Interesting. Yeah,
that actually happened in the Bad Batch episode. So, like, I would have said that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, except for they literally did that in a recent episode of The Bad Batch.
Star Wars, yeah.
Yeah, so you may be onto something there.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see what else. Oh, R2-D2 making a snow angel is the thing I didn't know I needed.
So is R2-D2 running into a magic mirror and becoming tiny.
That's also weird.
Not on my... maybe a tiny mirror is never on my Star Wars bingo card. But
R2 just doing shit this episode is just wild. And I don't think we appreciate that energy enough, honestly.
Yeah. it encapsulates what this show is all about, you know?
It's like we said, just, like we titled our episode.
Let's just have some weird shit happen, because yeah, why the fuck not?
Like we said in one of the titles of our most previous episode, you know, it's just about the vibes, man.
Yeah. It's just...
It's just about the vibes. It's just about are we vibing or not? And I respect that. Let's see. Yeah, I really like the idea. Like, yeah, the runestones were there all along, but the Empire, like, the villains couldn't find something that was so important to them that was in front of them the entire time. That their, like, greed blinded them.
So love has blinded you. Yeah. Yeah.
Classic. Maybe.
Classic Star Wars.
Classic Star.
Yeah. Do you have anything else for this episode? That's kind of all I.
All I got. Yeah. No, I don't think I got anything else for this episode. I think it was a fun conclusion to this arc. But I think I can speak for both Jacob and I when I say that Droids was a lot of fun. But I want to get. We both kind of want to get back to some of the meatier Star Wars, some of the stuff that we can really like get to with themes and stuff. And absolutely we're not. And I was just thinking about this with regard to other Star Wars properties. If you like droids, if you can find deep meaning in droids, if droids is something that really resonates with you, then all power to you.
By all means. Droids.
Yeah.
It was a fun show.
Yeah. But I think, like, for us, like, it was a bit weirder getting involved with this sort of, like, this level of campy in Star Wars. And you know me, I love campy shit in Star Wars. I live for campy shit in Star Wars. But I'm really excited to get into things like, you know, next on our docket is, well, the first one on our docket, which is silly and impactful at the same time, which I love. We're going to do season 12 and a half of In a Galaxy, which you know what it is, right?
Bad Batch.
Actually, there's a brief interlude we're going to do before season 2 of Bad Batch, nope, which is season 13 of In a Galaxy. But I decided to slip these in there because they've already happened in the timeline, but we didn't do them because, you know, they happened recently. But now I think enough time has passed to do a full In a Galaxy analysis of Tales of the Jedi.
Oh, all right.
Because all six of those shorts have happened in this time, at this point in the timeline.
True, yes.
But I didn't think we wanted to do them when they came out because we are inherently not a review show.
Yeah.
So I thought we would do one episode for Dooku, for the Dooku shorts, and one episode for the Ahsoka shorts, basically is what I thought we would do.
Fair enough.
So that's what you can expect down the pipeline for In a Galaxy. We are recording this the day that we are going to be streaming with Sean Broom, Maggie Wynerdy, and Brandon Wynerdy doing our bracket stream. So go check that out on the In a Galaxy YouTube channel if you have not already. It's been a fun journey covering droids, but I'm glad we've gotten to the end of it now. In the next week is episode 100 of In a Galaxy, which we have not announced this yet. We're going to here. We are doing a live stream on April 2nd. April 2nd, tune into the In a Galaxy YouTube channel. We're going to be live streaming with our good friends, four of the people who have influenced our podcasting journey most, Meg Dowell Mondam, Devor Mondam, Jared Bachman Stubbs, and Connor Jachidi. All of them are going to be on. Plus, we might have some other special guests join us on the way, play some games, have some fun, talk Star Wars, do whatever, celebrate 100 episodes.
100 episodes.
And 3 years of Star Wars In a Galaxy. We're so excited about that. Thank you for everybody who stuck along with us all the way, whether you started listening on episode 9 or 98. We're so glad to have you on this show as a listener, and we're really excited to put a lot of stuff ahead of us. Follow us on Twitter at In a Galaxy Pod, Instagram at Star Wars In a Galaxy. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We will be there. If we're not, email us, slbinagalaxy@gmail.com. You can follow my personal Twitter account at OGFan327. And I think until next time, may the Force be with you.